One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to Hump Day. It's Wednesday. If you made it here, it only goes uphill or downhill. I can't tell which one it is. It's a good thing. The week ends very quickly from Wednesday. You have made it, Tucson. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. You're on the Creative City Show, where daily, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10, we talk about the people and ideas creating Tucson's future and dig into the issues and themes critical towards getting us there. And we've got a good show for you today. At the bottom of the hour, the No on Prop 205 co-chairs of that campaign will be in. Prop 205 is on the ballot this fall, early November, and it's the Sanctuary City Initiative. It's known informally as the Sanctuary City Initiative. And today we'll have the co-chairs of the No on Prop 205 campaign in at the bottom of the hour to share what they're up to and what their thoughts are on this initiative. Before that, we will get into some stories. But tomorrow, let me just finish giving you a sneak peek, because I want you to put this on your calendars, if you will. The Arizona Daily Star did endorsements and recommendations for the city council candidates and the proposition on the upcoming November ballot. And I've seen a lot of community questions, a lot of community thoughts. It's probably putting it nicely. I have my own questions. And I am very grateful that I was able to reach out to Sarah Garrett Gasson, editor for the Arizona Daily Star, and said, hey, could we spend an hour on the radio and talk about what went into the decision? I've got questions. I'm reading community questions. Can we just have a conversation about it? And she was very gracious to come on and do that. That's our show tomorrow, Thursday, as we zoom towards the November election here in Tucson. So that's what we've got the next couple days for you. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to jump in and join the conversation. 790-2040. And we had a great day on the phones yesterday. It is always a fun show when you and I get to talk on the air together. So a couple of news stories to get through before we welcome Larry and Yvette in from the No on Prop 205 campaign here in Tucson. I don't know if you guys have seen the fundraising reports for this Senate race we've got going here in Arizona between Democrat Mark Kelly and Republican Senator Martha McSally. And this is shaping up to be, in some ways, if we thought Sinema McSally was a toss-up contested race, there's a good chance that the Kelly McSally race is going to be just as tight and just as expensive, if not more. And I actually think it's going to be more expensive. So I saw these numbers. I did some digging. I thought you would be interested. I was actually laughing with, I ran into Chris and Taylor on the way out of Wake Up Tucson. I ran into them as I was coming into the studio. And I was walking in just as Taylor was saying something about information gatherer. And we were joking, hey, we're talking about you, Zach. I go, I know, it's a sick disease. It's good for radio. Just collect things and then, hey, I think the listening audience would be interested in this. But here we go. Kelly's campaign said on Monday that he raised $5.5 million between July and September and had about $9.5 million in the bank at the end of the reporting period. McSally's campaign says she raised more than $3 million during the period and had $5.6 million in the bank. She's raised about $11 million in total for the campaign so far. Kelly has raised about $14 million so far. And what's fascinating, and maybe it's not fascinating, maybe we should have expected this, but we're not even into 2020 yet. I mean, the election doesn't even happen until 2020. And the two candidates have already spent, what is that, $25 million across the two of them. So I did a little bit of digging. First of all, Just to put this into perspective, I looked at what the presidential candidates in the last quarter have raised, right? President for the United States, not Senator for Arizona, but President for the United States. You've got Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar raising $4.8 million. You've got New Jersey Senator Cory Booker in the last quarter raising $6 million. And of course, it goes up from there, right? They're kind of at the bottom of the barrel, but they're running a national campaign. They're running a campaign where they're doing fundraisers around the country. They're doing town halls. They're on TV. They're doing debates. Now, certainly, it can't be naive. You know that the money is coming into these AZ Senate campaigns from around the country as well. But it's different, right? One is a state race, and one is a national race. I mean, Kelly's campaign raised $5.5 million, right? Raising more than Senator Amy Klobuchar and almost as much as Senator Cory Booker. I mean, if we're going to compare to Cory Booker, right? Cory's been a mayor. He's been a senator. He has massive name recognition. Mark Kelly isn't an unknown, but for a first-time candidate, someone that hasn't been in the same kind of public space, that's amazing. Now, yes, a decorated astronaut, husband to Gabby Giffords. I mean, he's got a lot of things going, but it's still different in my mind. It's different in the sense of, I mean, these numbers are absolutely incredible, right? So Kelly has $9.5 million in the bank at the end of the reporting period. He's got $14 million that he's brought into the race. McSally has brought about $11 million into the race, right? We're in October of 2019. The race is in 2020. Get this. Kyrsten Sinema raised $22 million in the 2018 race. $22 million total in the 2018 race. Martha McSally raised about $21.5 million. So I'm looking at those numbers and I'm going, Mark Kelly already has, what was that, $14 million in the bank, right? I mean, we're a year and change out from this election. And Sinema and McSally's race in 2018 was one of, if not the most expensive in the country. One more number for you. I thought this was interesting. I actually went back to the 2012 Arizona Senate or the last Senate race when Jeff Flake and Richard Carmona were going after it. The winning candidate, of course, was Jeff Flake, a Republican. He raised $9 million in 2012. Okay, we can adjust for inflation, but it's not that much more, right? Richard Carmona raised $6.5 million. So between 2012, where the winning candidate spent $9 million, and the 2018 winning candidate spent $22 million. I mean, it's just going bonkers, right? And I don't have a hot take about how much we're spending in election finance. I just thought, my goodness, we went from one high stakes, high money, nationally recognized Senate campaign in Arizona to another. And Kelly is just, this is, you know, just raising money like crazy for a first-time candidate. I think those numbers are going to balloon, and I think this is going to be another tough, tight race. They called the Sinema McSally one a toss-up. I got to think this one's a bit of a toss-up as well. And, Kelly is already painting himself as a moderate. He supported Kyrsten Sinema a couple weeks ago when she was under censure flack, if you will, for voting with Trump. Is it what, 55% of the time? A lot of Democratic groups got after her, and he said, hey, she's a moderate in Arizona, or rather a Democrat in Arizona. There's a certain way you got to run. This is kind of my personal opinion, but I think that's why he was supporting her. Anyway, I just thought that would be interesting. Those fundraising halls are incredible, big numbers. When we come back, our last story before the No on 205 group enters the green room, Pima County students lag the rest of Arizona in passing standardized math tests. We'll talk about that when we come back on the show. 790-2040, jump on the phones, chime in, don't go away. We'll be right back on the Creative City Show. Tucson, welcome back. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, on the Creative City Show, our Wednesday edition, hump day. Was that a Geico commercial, I think, back in the day, the camel walking through the office, hump day. And it all gets better from here as we head towards Friday. So much happening in Tucson this week. 10 West kicks off. We've been scheming some 10 West kickoff show content here. I'll leave that to be a surprise maybe for another day. The Tucson Film Festival is coming up. Tucson Meet Yourself, also known as Tucson Eat Yourself, is coming up. The tent started going up early this week in downtown Tucson. Encourage you to come downtown, but just know that the already interesting driving patterns downtown are going to get a lot more interesting because some downtown streets are closing. So if you're planning to come down and eat yourself, find out the people in Tucson that are here and what they're eating and eating that, I encourage you to do it. Just make sure that you put maybe 5 minutes in to figure out how you're going to get in and around. One quick encouragement, tons of garage space downtown. If you think it's only street parking or lot parking, it's not. Lots of garages that go empty, especially if you're willing to walk 1 or 2 or 3 minutes. So very easy. Just maybe do a little Googling ahead of time. October is the month in Tucson. October and March are the two event months of the year. It's about to get crazy. Tucson, we are talking some news items this morning. At the bottom of the hour, stick around. The No on Prop 205 campaign chairs are going to be in studio to talk about the Sanctuary City Initiative and why their position is what it is. And then tomorrow, don't forget, I was actually just messaging Sarah during the break, Sarah Garrett-Gaston from the Arizona Daily Star. I messaged Sarah on Facebook. I said, Sarah, man, a lot of stuff out there since you submitted your endorsements for the four seats and your recommendation on Prop 205. I know I have questions. I'm seeing questions. I've got a platform to ask those questions. Could we do a conversation together and kind of take an hour of your time? And she said yes to both. So very, very grateful for Sarah Garrett-Gaston's time tomorrow. If you have a question or you read the endorsements and you were scratching your head about something or you want to talk about something, send me an email. I see social media. I see the interwebs. I see some of the basic stuff. I'll be asking about it, in fact. But if you've got something specifically, shoot me an email. The Creative City Show. The show name, no spaces, @gmail.com. Appreciate you doing that. We'll do our best to add it all into the conversation tomorrow. To quickly wrap up the top half of the hour here, was interested to, and probably not surprised actually, to see this report that Pima County students lag the rest of Arizona in passing standardized math tests. Public school students statewide made slight improvements on this year's standardized assessment tests. The number of students passing the annual English and math tests, and this includes AZ Merit, ACT, SAT, the usual suspects, improved by 1 percentage point. Pima County students overall met the state average for the English language arts assessment, which is a 42% passing rate for both English and math, but fell 2 percentage points below average for math. Like the state as a whole, race and socioeconomic status factored heavily into test scores, a consideration that many say is a problem with AZ Merit and other standardized tests. It's interesting I didn't know this, but when you look at nationwide, here's some tough numbers to look at. White homeowners had a median household income wealth of $139,000. Asians had $156,000, compared with $12,780 for Black homeowners and $19,990 for Hispanic homeowners, the report found. So I have to say, I'm in this tension. I want to just stop right there. I'm in this tension where I live in these two realities, and I live in the tension of these two thoughts. the more and more I get involved in public space conversation, the more troubled I get by the dominance of identity politics. At the same time, and I hope you didn't tune out there, at the same time, there's no way you can get around the fact that race and socioeconomics plays a definite role in so many of the issues that we face in our city, in our state, and our country. And I think I just inserted that into this conversation because I think when everything comes down to race and ethnicity, I mean everything, not just the important stuff, but everything, when every conversation ends and starts around identity politics, I don't think that it's healthy for civil dialogue, for civic conversation, and for solutions. At the same time, challenges around socioeconomic status and race are embedded in so many of the themes that we deal with. And I know I just painted potentially some gray area in there, and that's because I think that it exists. But I'm troubled by one, I'm realistic about the other. And certainly in Pima County, certainly in Tucson, certainly in Arizona, this is of a high impact. Look at this. Of Pima County's largest 9 school districts, only 3 were more than half the student body passed both English and math. Are you guys ready for this? Catalina Foothills, Vail Unified, Tanca Verde, from highest to lowest. Those districts have the area's lowest poverty rates, according to 2018 district spending reports filed with the state auditor general. Catalina Foothills' poverty rate was 6%, and its current passing rates are 66% in English and 67% in math. Remember, the state bar is 42%. So in Catalina Foothills, where the poverty rate is 6%, passing rates are 20 percentage points above the state bar. Sunnyside Unified is the school district with the lowest number of passing scores at 26% in English and 28% in math. It's the district with the highest poverty rate in Pima County at 30%. So you've got this swing where you've got poverty at 6%, massive passing rates. Highest poverty rate in Pima County at 30%. You've got the lowest number of passing scores in English and math. These numbers are off the top of my head, so fact check me if you'd like. I'm going to give it my best shot. I think overall in Tucson, the poverty rate is 23%. Nationally, the number is 19%. So then you look at Sunnyside with 30%. That's pretty incredible. Tucson Unified, here we go. This is why the numbers sounded familiar. Tucson Unified, the county's largest and most diverse district, was second to last with 33% of students passing English and 31% passing math. TUSD has a high poverty rate, 23%, which is above the state average of 19%. That's why that number sounded familiar. The two local districts, by the way, just to be fair, that stood out as seemingly lacking a correlation between poverty and passing rates were Flowing Wells and Marana. Flowing Wells came in with the 4th highest passing rates despite having a 27% poverty rate. Conversely, Marana saw the 3rd lowest passing rates despite having a lower poverty rate at 11%. So that was interesting. In fact, when I remember I said in the last segment, I'm a sick, messed up information gatherer. it makes the radio job easy. I'll just say that. This was actually the top story in the Daily Star. Danielle Camara wrote it. Pima County students lag rest of Arizona in passing standardized math tests. If you want to go and read that article. That's what I was referencing. But remedying community poverty, I want to say this in terms of banging the drum. This is not new information. This is not enlightened information. This is not revelatory. We all know this. Tucson, Pima County, TUSD, keep naming the list, struggles with a poverty issue. It's not our only issue, right? There are probably gaps in leadership, gaps in administration, gaps, and I mean we could start a whole list, but our community poverty has deeper impacts than we know. What happens when, and this is not necessarily stopping students from graduating, but what happens when students have lower test scores, when higher education, when workforce development is not in their future? When we talk about a talent problem in Tucson and in our county, when we talk about retaining young talent, it doesn't start junior and senior year of college. Right, I work on efforts to start junior and senior year of college. Right, everyone says that's when college students are starting to make their decision. That's good. It's not the whole picture. Right, this conversation starts in first, second, third, fourth grade, middle school, high school. Remedying community poverty is something that we need to keep banging the drum on. If you missed my 1 hour last week about the article I read in the Tucson Weekly about one proposal to do that, you'll remember that I agreed that making sure that a student's quality of life outside of school is just as important as what is provided at school in terms of deciding their success. But I think that holistic strategy of safe neighborhoods, good infrastructure, good jobs, good workforce development, good opportunities. We need to create that whole pipeline, not just solve the problem where it exists today, but go back to the root cause and say, why is this happening? It involves predatory lending strategy. It involves, I think, to a large degree, quality pre-K. The data supports that. I think it's a whole strategy, but we have a poverty problem that just isn't going to go away. And so I think we need to do something different than we've done before, right? If what we've done up to now isn't working, let's look at a different way. Let's try something different. So I just wanted to bang that drum. Tucson, we'll be right back with No on Prop 205. Tucson, welcome back as we are flying through our 9 o'clock hour. Every day, Monday through Friday, we air 9 to 10 here on the Creative City Show, talking about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And there is perhaps not an issue that is more relevant, whichever way it goes, to the future of Tucson than the Sanctuary City Initiative that is on the ballot. It's going to show up on your ballot as Proposition 205, but in the news you will have also heard about it as Sanctuary City Initiative. It's a citizen-led initiative that was put on the ballot for the November election. And in studio with us today are the co-chairs of the No on Proposition 205 campaign, Larry Lucero on my right and Yvette Marie Margayan. Did I get that sort of right?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. I got the yes. It's always a good start when you get your guest's name right. It just goes well from there. How are you both today?
Doing great, thanks. How about you?
Good.
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Sure. You're a little busy these days, as anybody who is who's involved with this issue. Tell us a little bit about the main concerns that the No on Proposition 205 has about the Sanctuary City Initiative, and we'll go from there. And if you want to share a little bit about what the initiative aims to do and where and that is a root of what your concerns are, let's go from there.
Well, thank you. First and foremost, thanks for the opportunity to inform the public on a very important matter that has been placed on the ballot for the general election. The Proposition 205 basically limits the ability of Tucson police to conduct some of their operations in the field with respect to how they engage with citizens and non-citizens with respect to some of the leftover vestiges of Senate Bill 1070, which was around 10 years ago that was enacted. Many provisions of 1070 have been found unconstitutional. However, there are still a few elements of that state statute that still are applicable, and Tucson Police has changed the way they address their encounters with citizens with respect to literally not enforcing immigration checks, quite frankly, but have gone to a great extent to train their officers in the field to make sure that they do not conduct immigration checks on citizens in their day-to-day encounters with them. So the second piece of that proposition that is very troubling is also limiting Tucson Police Department's ability to work with federal agencies, which may have a much greater erosion of our local safety and security because of the vast resources that the feds have available here that Tucson Police Department uses as is efforts to fight crime and to solve crimes that have occurred in our community. And we can get into more detail on that, but those two very innocuous sounding sentences on the ballot have great unintended consequences. And as a result of our evaluation of those consequences, it became very clear to Yvette Marine and myself, as well as Manuel Davila, our treasurer, that we needed to mount a campaign to educate the public. And there are three basic concerns that we have. Well, the first one, first and foremost, the entire mayor and council of the city of Tucson has been opposed to this proposition, even though they had to place it on the ballot. Secondly, we run the risk that the Arizona State Legislature will look at this proposition as a violation of state statute, therefore allowing them to withhold state shared revenue. And we can get into details on that a little later. And the third element, again, as I mentioned earlier, is the risk that we run of losing our ability to work with federal law enforcement agencies. And so with those three issues, I think public safety is at great risk. Our core services that the city of Tucson provides will be decimated by the potential loss of state shared revenue. And finally, our leadership of this community has spoken uniformly that they think this is a solution that is not appropriate at this time. The mayor and council has gone way beyond the call in terms of creating an environment in Tucson, as well as other community leaders, in creating a welcoming, immigrant-friendly environment, and that is our community.
Yvette, I have lots of questions, and I'm sure you have answers. But anything that you want to add to that as we're talking about Prop 205, what it aims to do, and any concerns that the No on 205 campaign is really wanting to communicate.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you, first off, Larry, for that answer. I couldn't have said it better myself. One of the biggest concerns that I have is specifically related to safety of the public. For whatever reason, I keep hearing the yes on 205 people saying that really it's an issue of immigration. But when it comes to who commits crimes, it's anyone, regardless of immigration status. So I think a lot of, for example, the family of Isabella Solis, that case was not able to be solved without the help of the FBI. So there are situations such as that where TPD wouldn't be able to get access to, you know, federal databases such as fingerprints and sexual assault type of databases, and losing those resources would definitely have a negative impact in this community.
One last thing that I wanted to ask is, what are the numbers that are at TPD's disposal of any traffic stops or anything that has resulted in a deportation? That's one of the concerns that the proposition aims to assist, as it's written, is making safer interactions between citizens and the police, and limiting the power of Border Patrol and ICE at a local level. Do the numbers portray that there is a problem in our community with ICE and Border Patrol getting involved in deportations or overstepping, or do the general ordinances that TPD is following right now seem to be working? What's your view on that?
Well, the facts just don't support the claims that have been made by the proponents. And frankly, TPD has made a number of stops over the last 21 months. They number about 26. actually. That's the exact number, I believe. And of those, there were three occasions where ICE had to be called to the scene because of the conditions or the nature of the individuals that the Tucson police encountered. In all of those events that have occurred, not a single person who was arrested for other crimes that may have been committed within the city, and there were three instances of those 26 stops where people were actually arrested by Tucson police. None of those individuals were deported because they are being adjudicated through the criminal justice system first. And so there is a very strict general orders that have been created via the leadership of the mayor and council with the assistance of the American Civil Liberties Union, a very thorough reorganization of the police department's general orders were conducted several years ago in order to position Tucson as an immigrant-friendly community that still adhered to federal and state requirements in terms of our policing at the local level. But the police department has done an exemplary job of adhering to those statutory requirements, but continuing to do their job and providing the safety that our community deserves.
In our next segment, I'm going to continue with Larry and Yvette talking about a few things. The authors of these of this citizens initiative say that they have built in safeguards on the money side and on collaboration with public safety. I want to dig into a little bit more why you're concerned that those safeguards may not be as safe as assumed. Before we jump into that and before we go to break, it almost seems like there's a kind of a coalition of sorts of diverse community members that are saying no on 205. Who's all involved or is supportive or is working on this campaign?
Well, we've had a number of associations already step up after evaluating what the terms of the proposition state, starting with the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, which is a leadership group of community and business leaders, the Tucson Association of Realtors, who have a very diverse workforce who are in all parts of this region, the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, a very thorough evaluation was conducted by the Hispanic Chamber and also has come out with a very strongly worded statement opposed to this proposition. Yvette, do you have any others that we can talk about?
Yes, Chicanos por la Causa also came out opposed to Prop 205. And the Daily Star also recently submitted a piece saying that they are also against Prop 205.
That's right. I have Sarah Garrett-Gasson on tomorrow to speak to that. We'll be back for another segment with Larry and Yvette to get into the weeds a little bit more on the dynamics of Prop 205 and why they are no on Prop 205. Much more to come, Tucson. We'll be right back. Tucson, we're back for part two of our conversation with the co-chairs of the No on Prop 205 campaign, Larry Lucero and Yvette Marie Margayan, the co-chairs of an initiative to have a no vote on this initiative that is on the ballot to make Tucson a sanctuary city. It's a November ballot item. So we kind of set the table a little bit in terms of some of the big concerns. I want to get your thoughts on a couple of things that are under debate about this this proposition and get your view. One is that the writers of Proposition 205 believe that they have put safeguards in that will prevent Tucson from losing federal or state funding. The city attorney believes that that this proposition will put Tucson at risk of violating SB 1487. The authors of the initiative believe that they have written in safeguards to that. You both don't think that is true. Why would Tucson be at risk of losing what could be a quarter of its annual city budget if this initiative passes?
Well, thank you. That's a great question. And if anyone doubts the will of the Arizona legislature in terms of its willingness to punish cities who get out of line, in their view, all you have to do is a couple of examples. City of Bisbee passed an ordinance to outlaw plastic bags in their community, and the legislature felt that the city exceeded its authority. There are several communities, including Tucson, who's considering raising the smoking age that you are able to buy cigarettes from 18 to 21. There's already an effort on the part of one legislator to ask the Attorney General to review which communities, which cities have adopted more stringent age requirements for that particular purchase of smoking products. So you can see that the legislature has passed statutes that they feel are adequate in order to provide good governance for the state of Arizona. Municipalities have from time to time exceeded that authority by passing their own local ordinances. Tucson attempted to do that a couple occasions where we did a gun buyback process, and the state felt that Tucson exceeded its authority. And again, we do not need, and we believe that as if this proposition is voted in, the mayor and council will have to take an action to accept the decision of the people in order for it to be fully completed in terms of the process that the city goes through. That alone should trigger a inquiry on the part of the state in terms of whether or not the city has violated its statutory authority in terms of declaring these conditions in Tucson to be implemented in Tucson. To make a long story short, the will of the legislature has been demonstrated in the past that they will take actions that punish cities by reducing their state shared revenue. Tucson's general fund depends on the sales tax shared revenue that comes to Tucson. It provides very critical services for our most vulnerable populations. If the city loses any of those resources, that I think is a critical problem that any mayor and council does not want to have to face. The loss of about 25% of its discretionary spending abilities will have a devastating effect on our community, affecting, again, those most vulnerable in our community.
Yvette, the other issue that the Yes on 205 initiative says there are safeguards for is public safety, and in fact argues that this will make our community safer. The No on 205 campaign believes that if Sanctuary City passes in November, that our city will actually become less safe, and that the proposal for partnership with federal agencies is a no-go. Could you explain the concerns that the No on 205 campaign has about public safety and collaboration with state and federal officials?
Yes, so we would effectively be losing approximately $12 million in grant funding from the federal government. And that money goes to various programs such as crime lab positions and equipment vital to offender prosecution, Spanish-speaking detectives for sexual assault and domestic violence investigations, traffic safety enforcement, record management systems needed for all case reports, public records, narcotics investigations, auto theft investigations, the list goes on and on. We're not sure how much or how many of these programs would be affected, but we know that they definitely will be affected.
There's a piece that your campaign talks a lot about within the initiative as it is written that talks about collaboration between Tucson Police Department and state and federal authorities not being allowed until a memorandum of understanding is signed that requires that requires certain action or inaction on the part of state and federal authorities. You have a concern with that line. Could you go into detail on that a little bit more?
Yes. So it would effectively create a loss of federal support. The initiative would require TPD to acquire a memo of agreement, an MOA, signed by a federal agency prior to engaging in a joint operation or investigation. So we'd be asking federal investigators to give up what they're legally sworn to do, which is to investigate and take action. And after speaking with, you know, experts on this who have many years of experience working in this realm, they know that this is simply something that won't happen. It's not likely that any federal agency will sign an MOA.
I'll let you decide which one to answer this question, but you hinted at it in the first segment. The mayoral candidate, Democratic mayoral candidate Regina Romero, is on record as vehemently opposing Proposition 205. What do you believe that her concerns are and the concerns of the current mayor and the rest of the council and most of, if not all of, the new council members coming in? I believe Lane Santa Cruz has supported at least the idea of it, but I think she's the only one to do so. What are the concerns that are driving that opposition from individuals who, for their entire career, have, in the case of Regina Romero, been human rights activists and supporters of these issues on the ground? What's the concern that you're hearing?
Well, I think not speaking for the presumptive mayor Romero, but her concerns are very clear. Her fear that this proposition will cause the city to lose a quarter of its general fund is the overriding concern that she has with respect to providing services for the most vulnerable. And so she's articulated that on several occasions since she won the primary in the Democratic primary in August. And so she's very clear in her opposition, and we applaud her in terms of her efforts over the last 12 years and more recently over the last 8 years. The legacy of this council, led by Mayor Jonathan Rothschild, is that we have created an environment unanimously among those council members that we are an immigrant-friendly community. The general orders that have been adopted and have been modified reflect that. And so this legacy that they have is a unique response to the rhetoric that we hear out there on the national stage. And Tucson is unique that way in that it has produced, we believe, an exemplary example of how a city can manage its relationships with undocumented citizens or undocumented individuals that either reside here in the community or are passing through. We've been very generous in our efforts to work with the mass of folks that have been seeking asylum in the U.S. So to put it in a nutshell, we don't expect the new mayor and council to stop that effort. We know that the new mayor and council will continue to support efforts to make our community even more immigrant friendly and make sure that we do not take two steps back. This proposition will penalize those efforts and put us in a position where our immigrant friendly status will be at great risk.
Yvette, last question, because we're quickly closing in on time, and maybe I'll just ask you in advance to, if there's a website or a Facebook page or any place where someone can go, if there is one, for further information. Chief Magnus as well wrote an article in 2017 supporting the welcoming atmosphere required in cities, but has come out also in strong opposition to 205. What are his concerns, as you've come to understand, as a campaign?
Well, first, and to your first question, is we do have a No on Prop 205 website that should be easy to find. Should have been active here in the last 24 hours, and then there will be video and digital information that will help voters get the facts that we have touched on briefly here this morning. Chief Magnus has been a great proponent of elevating the general orders and has taken a leadership role in making sure that those general orders reflect the intent and the wishes and the vision of the mayor and council. And I think he's done that in an admirable way. And so he's a leader in respect, with respect to how his officers work in the field, and has taken it upon himself to make sure with his efforts out in the community to share that message with voters.
Yvette and Larry, Larry Lucero, Yvette Marie Marguerian, thank you for your time in studio. They are the co-chairs of the No on Proposition 205 campaign. You can find more information on their website. Don't forget, Tucson, tomorrow coming up, Sarah Garrett Gaston will be in studio to talk about why they endorsed the candidates they endorsed and why they recommended the direction they did on Proposition 205. We'll be back 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you there. Zach Yenser signing off the Creative City Show.